Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage podcast. I am excited about today's guest, and, well, you should be too. What I like to do when I tell people, I say this on the last podcast, so forgive me if I repeat myself, I'm always just kind of looking around and grazing and seeing and watching people and seeing who's doing things. And I believe in the ripple effect of life. I believe that when we meet somebody else, right, we all like to say there's no coincidences in life, right? That when we meet somebody, then we meet somebody else. Well, a lot of times we forget about the other person that we meet after, right? I ran into, by chance, and started talking to and became friends with a well-known guy named Naudi Aguilar, who is the founder of Functional Patterns, etc. And he was kind enough to come on the Cognitive Rampage podcast months ago. I think he's episode 69. And anyway, that was kind of him to do. Please go back and listen to that episode. I think I've listened to it now 9 times, and I still can barely grasp all of the information and competence that flows out in that episode. Now, back to the ripple effect. What I like to do is then follow someone else that's linked to that person. And then I kind of see, because you can tell a lot by the people that are around people. And I've followed a few. And Nina Chow, who is joining us on the podcast today, live from Austin, Texas, representing the Austin, Texas branch of Functional Patterns. She is a master in Functional Patterns. She is also an actress. She's also a DJ. And has put music together that she found an old scratchy record of and bothered to put up on SoundCloud, which I thought was pretty good. And I'm an old DJ myself, and so I could relate to that. And the more you look through the things that Nina has done, I'm sure you'll find her on Facebook and wherever else you'll find Nina. She's in every social media. So you'll see a long list, and it begins with chasing what seems like, this is what I'm putting together, right? I haven't talked to Nina. I don't know Nina. We have not. We had like maybe a 5-minute conversation about the scheduled time today, but that's about it. But outside of that, we're strangers. But what I do know and could gather just from what I put together, she's chased what she's loved from day one, that she's also pushed to help people from day one. And her early days started in self-care, taking care of people. And either way you look at it, whether it's hair, whether it's facial things, whether it's just something very basic, it's still the helping industry. It's still looking after other people to make them feel good. And then you follow her resume all the way through. It takes her up to Equinox, which is a very well-known personal, if not the best personal training to the stars. I mean, that's it. When it's the epitome of personal training, you can just say Equinox, okay? And she takes herself to there and then pushes herself beyond that, because if you know anything about functional patterns, let me tell you about the cusp, cutting edge of changing everything that represents fitness today. That is functional patterns. Naudi is an inspiration to me. He has moved me in certain ways to keep with certain missions and fights that I'm on in certain directions. So, and you could see Nina fits that mold. And she's followed that and now has become, like I said, a master in functional patterns. Now, I'm interested also. I noticed that she's involved with some golf things for some reason. I looked into it for a little bit, but I really like to learn from the guests, so I try not to go too far. I just write down things I want to know more about. So, with no further ado, Nina Chow, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Adam. I'm incredibly grateful.
What's that?
I'm incredibly grateful. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you good. Go ahead.
I hear an echo. Am I just going to talk through it?
Oh, if you're echoing back, you may have some sound on, like your computer may be echoing sound back to your microphone there.
Okay, so I just mute.
This is what happens, people, when we go live. No worries. This happens on most of it. So I'm going to have a sip of coffee. Check out this coffee cup. I love this thing. Mike Mariotti sent me this. Oh, I've lost you. We can't hear you at all. Well... This is, you know what? It's kind of what I'm telling you to do right now. Nina, there you go.
I'm trying to get shit done here in good old Austin, Texas. Can you hear me now?
I can.
I don't hear echo anymore.
Wonderful. See, that worked out great. So welcome to the show, Nina Chow.
Thank you. I'm incredibly honored and still in shock and awe why you brought me on here. This is my first time ever doing a podcast or interview of any sort. Outside of, you know, interviewing for a job. So I had no idea what to expect. I didn't know how to prepare. I started to try to prepare. I started to go onto your channel and look through the different archives and podcasts that you had of everyone you previously interviewed. And I went from being really excited to super overwhelmed because everyone has PhDs or they've written a book or started a major organization. And I'm like, does he know who, like, how does he know who I am? But obviously you've done your research and I'm incredibly honored.
I will say that one of our top podcasts, actually in the top 10, he has two visits, which is Big Mike the Messenger. He's a brother to me. I love him very much. This man does not even have a website, and he is in our top 10 awesome. Downloads of all time.
Cool. Yeah, I listened a little bit of that. But I had to stop myself because I started going through just a lot of like self-doubting. I'm like, yeah, I don't need to, you know, I'm just going to go in with a blank slate, have no expectations, be completely unprepared because that's just the way I go about life anyway. So why would I go about this differently?
That's it, man. That's it. I would ask you, how many conversations have you had with people you like?
Oh, can't even count.
Well, that's all this is.
So,
I want to go, I am going to dive in your head though. So all right. I'm not the typical guy to just have a regular conversation. So maybe I was wrong to say this is a regular conversation, but I tend to like to get to know people because I don't know, other people's experience of this human experience, shout out to Xavier, is, I don't know, something I almost live for. Is to be able to try to see it through your perception and how you've lived it, right? And maybe that's the therapist in me or something, I don't know. So take me back to little Nina. Tell me where little Nina came from and that experience. What was that like?
You know, I was incredibly blessed. When I look back at it, I would have to say it was kind of an unusual childhood. In a sense that when you ask most people, you know, what were you doing at the age 5, age 6, you know, you're out playing or whatever. But my mom, at a very young age, before we even put in preschool, she, you know, it's cultural indoctrination to start, you know, making your child as intelligent as possible. My mother's love for music and studying of the arts was so important to her that, you know, at such a young age, they don't like start schools for that. So she started homeschooling us in music theory and understanding how to read sheet music and then tutoring on us on mathematics. And at a very young age, being exposed to the opera and being taken to symphonies and seeing world-class performers like Yo-Yo Ma and Isaac Perlman and, you know, seeing these incredible operas. And it's just kind of crazy. So I was exposed to that at a very young age.
How old?
That all started probably, I don't know, very young. I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, and she was part of the, so we had access to that and all the university concerts. So that's how we had VIP status. That was probably the most VIP of VIP statuses I would ever want to boast about, you know, because it changed my life and shaped me for who I am today. And, you know, I have to always look back at my roots and, you know, what got me here today. And it always goes back to my mother, you know. And so I'm very, very, very grateful for that experience because from there, you know, she really wanted us to learn how to play an instrument. She let us choose, you know, and for whatever reason, I chose violin and my sister chose to play the cello.
And my two favorite instruments, by the way. So now the intro music that I played before we went live. So, I couldn't not, you know, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I teared up. I was like, wow, yeah, classical music.
So, all right, what song? What song was it? If you name that song. But for everyone listening, to give you context, there's a certain ritual that I go through before we start the Cognitive Rampage with every guest, and it includes a series of songs. And the last song before we came on that I always play before we go live is by Sebastian Bach. And I had a friend play that song for me one time, and I have to agree that it was the most beautiful song ever made. That would just seem so, it tells the most beautiful story. You know, you could almost see a life from A to Z in that song. Sorry, I kind of went off there.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because the theme of classical music, I think, plays through my entire life. And everybody's, you know, that's kind of like the story of life. But so actually, I jumped into the violin too quickly. She actually started teaching us how to play piano. So we went from, she would make us sheet music and make us these little worksheets, and she would make it fun, you know. And at the time when we were learning it, I didn't put it together that what we were going to see and what we were going to learn, to what we were going to hear was like the same thing. Because she was tutoring us, she would do math for an hour or whatever, and then do music. So intuitively, it's kind of crazy. I'm sure at the time she didn't go out and like read a study. Oh, if you teach your child, you know, how to play an instrument and do math, they'll be incredibly intelligent child. That wasn't her intention. But that's the studies out there show, if, you know, you get into classical music and learn an instrument, your mathematical skills will be highly accelerated. And so to start that at a young age was really neat. So by the time we got into piano, it's all laid out there for you, you know. And then so that was kind of the intro into playing a stringed instrument. And then I kind of just the piano for a little bit. I would play around on it. So we started getting really serious, my sister and I.
Can you teach me something about the violin? I know nothing. I'm still a wannabe guitar player, okay? Now, I have been blessed with what they call crooked pinkies, okay? Now, I was born this way, so for everybody watching and those of you out there in the crooked pinky family world, there you go. Now, when you try to play the piano, and every time you try to do it and you're hitting the inside key with that, there's actually videos out of how to play the piano and the guitar with a crooked pinky.
So, wow.
Yeah, it's
fascinating.
It's so hard.
You turn the body or you turn the arm. I would think that you would have to adjust.
That's like a whole Y, man. It's crazy. Maybe I didn't develop all the way in the womb or something, but I couldn't do it. I was just I probably could have. I was young and I just gave up. And I'm having issues with the guitar too, because when you try to put down on the string, it goes forward, right? So teach me something about the violin. I know nothing, right? But I do think the cello. I love that sound a little more. But
I love the cello. I wish I could have played the cello. It's so hard. Yeah. You gotta have strong fingers, you know.
Yeah. So
but I love the sound. I love deeper string sounds, but I think I just chose the violin because it was small and I was little, and perhaps I didn't think I could handle a cello. But I do love the deep sound of the cello and the viola too. You know, I tried to learn the viola at some age, but when you learn how to read sheet music in a certain key, and then, you know, bass clef from piano, it's like when you try to learn that other clef, I forget what it's called, it's just so confusing. So I was like, forget trying to learn other keys. It's easier to just learn instruments by ear sometimes, you know. But
yeah, my daughter got that gift. My daughter has an ear, man. I love music, but we all do, right? But she can hear something on the guitar and then just turn it right back to you. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I was able to do that when I was very young.
How old were you doing that?
Shoot. The first, I don't know what age. I would say my tweens. Wow. Perhaps. When did Legends of the Fall come out? That was the first time I discovered I had a real talent.
Are you talking about Tristan?
No, not the movie, the soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
that's funny.
The movie was all right, but something about the soundtrack just, you know, hit me somewhere deep down, and I just became obsessed with it, and I just learned pretty much the entire soundtrack on piano and, you know, the violin by ear, you know.
Wow.
I was like, holy shit, I can do that. Like, I can if you love something so much that you feel it in your bones and you don't need, you know, documentation showing this is how you do it. You know what I mean? Like, if you can recreate something through the feeling of emotion and that deep desire of creating something you love, again, repeating myself, you're going to fucking do it. You know what I mean? And so from a young age, it's like, wow, this power of visualization is really, it's evident. You know what I mean? And because I could try to force myself to do that with other things, like learn how to do other things by ear perhaps, but, you know, you have to have that intense desire, you know, that emotional attachment or whatever that pulls it out of you. So it just, I think that was one of the earliest self-realizations I had about myself was that nobody told me, hey, I'm going to need you to learn this by a certain date, you know, and, you know, memorize it and play it back for me, you know? So
like your first attempt in realizing that you wanted to self-teach, like you yeah. realized that you could follow a passion or follow an interest, if you will, and that would yeah. lead to something.
Exactly. And so,
did you end up playing some concerts? Were you ever nervous walking on stage having to, now I got to clear up. Do
yeah.
I sound like am I a dumbass when I say violin? Am I supposed to say viola?
No, so the violin is correct. Viola is a different instrument. It's a little bit larger in body. And it's
all right.
Key
so I made myself an idiot power. After all. So I ended up making myself look stupid anyway. That's great, man. Way to go.
No, those are the best moments. Yeah. So, otherwise, you don't know, you know.
So now I'm getting in the head. So it's young, it's learning, it's free learning, follow your interest, but and it wasn't pushed to you, right? I just see this.
Okay, it was at a certain point. So this is where it kind of gets tricky, when it kind of starts to poke with your head and you're just like, okay, so at a very young age, we're put in lessons and we start taking private lessons and then we get put in youth symphonies and even before youth symphonies, we were put into these competitions. I think it was like, maybe it was called Suzuki or something like that. There was this book series, and I think you would go to these competitions and then you would like start getting awarded and getting ribbons. So then you start getting validated based on your performance and your merit. So that sort of recognition started kind of at a young age, you know, and from my parents, you know. And so from there, so that's a different story, but we'll get back into that. So it became very serious. And then going to our first symphony was the Tucson Youth Symphony. I think I started that in about middle school.
Wow.
And
wow, that's
impressive. For youth symphonies like that, yeah, it was an incredible experience. There's no other, till this day, I can't explain the type of high that you get playing in such a large group of music, being a part of this huge picture, you know, like your tiny role in this massive sound that affects, you know, not only you being involved, but as far as the, you know, anyone can hear, it affects everything from there out. So it's, you start to see at a very young age, like how finely tuned your instrument, your sound, your frequency that you, you know, you're collectively part of the symphony. It's like what you do on your own, it's the hours of practice and drills and every little thing that you have to do to get every little part right affects that one performance, you know? So I kind of started to see that as a map, you know, as my way to navigate through the world, is that I'm an instrument. So if I'm out of tune somehow, or I try to speed ahead, you can't, you're part of a big picture. You can't go at your own pace. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't work like that. You're going to fuck up the whole song, you know? And it's based off of geometry. It's based off of physics. It's everything is musical, is mathematical. You know, that was ingrained in my blood at a very young age, at an age that I couldn't even really fully understand it. But then you see it through your patterns throughout your life. You know what I mean? So the way that this relates to functional patterns is that it's an intuitive feeling of your connection, you know, to yourself and to the greater picture symphony of all, you know, and your role in the world. But it's a way of living. It's a way of it's not just a way of living, but it's a way of understanding. So me discovering functional patterns years later, it was just like, holy crap. Like, I've been living this before I even ever discovered it. You know what I mean?
You got me getting all verklempt over here. I mean,
so I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I started living this way of understanding at a very young age and just seeing that the greater picture and everything. And but to create some polarity in the story. So, okay, so going back to the music, discovering, you know, the self-drive to want to create something beautiful and discover the talent within me, it starts to get hindered when you have a very strict parents who are like, you need practice every day for this much time, and they start creating these schedules and deadlines, and you're not doing it because you enjoy it anymore. You know what I mean? And then you, we started that at 6. And then at age 9, golf was introduced to us by my father. So my father is a huge golf fan, and, you know, he started playing a couple years before he introduced us to it. So he would take us, you know, to the driving range and to the putting green. And we got our first set of clubs. I think I was around 9. Yeah. And so we started taking lessons. So then we're simultaneously playing golf and going to orchestra. That's our life. And going to school. So we didn't really play. I don't feel like we really like played with other kids very much, except in those two realms of our life. So, so golf is also very intense. So we were put in lessons, and I went to golf camps. This is probably from the time I was, I think, 12 through 15 or 16 before entering high school, pretty much my entire middle school. So then we're also playing the junior leagues around town. At this time, I'm still in Tucson, Arizona. Did I say I was born there? I don't know if I ever said that. It doesn't really matter. But so now in the summertime, we're playing golf tournaments and taking lessons. And so that takes a lot of time, you know, so pretty much half our day, no, our whole day is on the golf course for many times out of the year, if not, you know, doing homework and playing our instruments.
You were like little Russian Rocky IVs, like just training you and preparing you. What I know about golf is, my cousin Darrell Lowry, he went as far as anybody I know. You know, I don't know any professionals like that or whatnot, but he chased that dream for almost 15 years of, you know, almost making it by a stroke or two, you know, teaching, you know, living that life. He would hustle from golf course and play for money during the week to survive. You know, he lived a hard life, and why, you know, it's a rough life doing that. But then coming up, I can imagine you as a young kid, and it's very regimented. I mean, it was just like you said, I mean, it's repeat, over, perfect the one performance. And then it so matches the music. I mean, perfect the one performance. Now, I do see a contrast. Was there a difference when you played golf when it was just you in the club and the ball versus you as one instrument in the orchestra?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's such an individual sport, you know? And I don't really have a competitive mindset. I never really have. And so I would go out there. It was terrible in terms of, you know, being a good performer on the golf course. Because I'd try to be like, hey, how's it going? You know, like, I didn't try to be friends with people, but I would try to be encouraging. And I was never keeping tally of my score so much. Like, I got to win this tournament. I got to beat this person. And, so I didn't get that competitive mindset, and girls at that age were really, really competitive, you know, and I didn't understand it.
Yeah, isn't that the scene though? I mean, isn't the music and golf that's competitive? Have you ever seen that? Have you seen that documentary Trophy Kids by Chris Bell?
No.
Watch that. Watch the documentary Trophy Kids. It was on HBO, but watch the full one on Netflix. There is a, young woman such as yourself, or a young little girl about your age whose father puts her in golf, and oh my gosh, and you'll get upset, I promise you. There's a, oh man, but watch that documentary. So I mean, that life is like those poor little girls they parade down fashion shows and contests and stuff, little it's like that, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah. So, like, with the ribbons from the violin, and then you get in these golf tournaments, and you start winning these plaques and these trophies, and to see, I mean, it's great to see your parents proud of you. You know, there's nothing as validating. But to see their excitement when you win a physical trophy, it just, well, I started rubbing me the wrong way starting from a very young age. And I just started to despise what these things symbolized. You know what I mean? And then they're putting them on the walls and like stacking, making these trophy shelves. So when you see trophy kids, I'm like, shit. I went through something like that. I'm like choked up, you know, thinking that there's a movie out there, because it fucks with you psychologically, you know? It's like, I guess many kids, I don't know, I'd probably continue to live their life thinking that these are the true rewards from life, you know? But for me, from a very young age, I just fucking hated it, you know? Because they're so attached to, this is who you are, and this is what makes you who you are, and why we value you, and, you know, we put all this time and money and investment into, you know, honing your skills in these things, and to see that happiness and that, it just... It made them, I feel like, well, I know it did, but it makes them more concerned about that than they are about you emotionally. You know, I'm not saying they weren't loving parents. Oh my God, they sacrificed their whole lives for us to give us this, you know, but there's a huge difference, obviously, between, you know, supporting actually what true emotional support is. So when you're not giving the child that through actual true attentive emotional support, and you don't know what to, you don't know how to do it, and it's comfortable for you, you just go back to just giving them more opportunities and valuing their trophies and stuff like that. But I've never talked about this, I don't think. So it's just now coming. It's really interesting. And I'm not trying to put a bad light on my parents, but don't worry. A lot of times my biggest realizations are made when I'm talking about them. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah, that flow state, yeah.
So.
Well, I have a, just don't, this is what I do. So, you know, this is what I do. What's he say on Game of Thrones? I drink, I know things. This is, you know, this is what I do. So I extract the marrow. I think somebody told me I had a talent. What was it? I had a talent, one of, like, I don't know, two maybe. And the one talent that he said I had, that's right, it was a joke. He's like, you know, the one talent you have, man, is you can extract the marrow from people. And so, you know... I touch my chest as you're kind of talking like that, because trophy kids hit me that way. I was raised that way as a football player, baseball player. So I live that same life. And, you know, I'm going to just announce it here. I haven't ever said what I'm working on now as my third book. I'm co-authoring a book right now. I've talked about that. But the next book I'm coming out is, I'm on a mission to get inside the DSM, which is the Diagnostic Statistic Manual, the Bible, if you will, of mental health diagnosis. And I believe it is missing a diagnosis, a very specific diagnosis, where the etiology is different than where they try to place it. And it's something that I call athlete's depression. Athlete's depression is very, very real. And what matches it does not, someone would put it next to identity dissociative disorder, typically, right? Or a major depressive disorder. But just like I witnessed you say here, Nina, is it's a different etiology, meaning it builds differently. If you take a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, and you raise them as to be a gladiator, whether that's musician or sports, they're shaped then. You said the perfect words. It's amazing, because what I say is you then teach your child that their value is based in how they perform. One of the things I say is the worst thing you can tell your kid when they get a grade on a report card you don't like is you're better than this. When you tell them you're better than this, that child's brain, it functions differently than an adult's. So it processes the information by saying, okay, well, my value then correlates to my performance. And so if I perform well, I get value. And then the problem is your entire life, we then chase performance to find value. And then when we can no longer perform, we lose value. And here's a staggering statistic that I'm coming up on. I'm going to put this out there now. I probably shouldn't, but what I'm finding, all of this talk about concussions, etc., in these sports is overshadowing something much, much darker. And something much, much darker is the idea that nearly 60 to 70% of all athletes that counts high school, college, professional, amateur, wherever they stop, it doesn't matter whether they stop at 2 years in the pros or they played through high school and that's it. 60 to 70% fall into addiction, depression, mental health disorders. They fall into violence and jail and prison. This is what happens, abusive relationships. And this is a different etiology. And so I'm on a fucking mission to prove the fact that athlete's depression is a diagnosis that sets in because of the way that you were raised, the way that I was raised, and many, 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 many people out there were raised to do. And it doesn't have to be sports. Like I said, school's the same way. Wherever you perform, if you're raised to perform, man, what message are we telling our kids? You know, that if you perform well, I have value. I have a 16-year-old daughter. She doesn't have to perform at anything. The value of her will never change. You know, I love my daughter regardless of what she does. She could shoot me, and tomorrow I'm going to love her the same. So the value of what she brings to the table, her performance doesn't deem whether I hold her value. Man, I'm sorry. I'm going off. It fucking means so much to me. And the way you moved me, man, you put me into this cognitive rampage. It's your fault. And you use those words. You said them. You said performance and value. We have never spoke about this ever. Did we? Did we ever talk? I don't know. Did we? No. So perform.
Oh, you, me, or you in general on your show?
Like, no, me and you. We've never chatted. So, I mean, you use those two fucking words specifically, performance and value, and you correlated trophies to value. I mean, and I'm done. Proceed, ma'am. I'm sorry. I just totally just went off.
No.
But it's fucking true, and they better put it in that diagnostic manual. So for all you athletes out there that feel a weird, there's an etiology, it's specific. It follows depression versus mania. It looks like bipolar. It starts to feel like ADHD, and over time, it looks like major depressive disorder, and it's poorly diagnosed. And then later down the line, addiction sets in, and they get hit with schizophrenia, bipolar, identity dissociative disorder. And that's where, that's where they wind up. That's more damaging than any concussion and anywhere. Sorry.
No. You may have just identified something that I went through, actually.
Yeah, it's complete.
Not even kidding. So
I know. This is the book that I'm putting out. This is what I've been steadily. I'm writing this and researching this now. This is the next one. And I will prove this. And one day, Nina, they will put it out there that athlete's depression is a real thing. It exists, and it's not identity dissociative disorder. It's a long-term developmental mental disorder that is completely ignored. How many high school students play actual sports? Yeah. 30 to 40% of kids will experience that. Now, if you count that will try out one time, nearly 75% of kids try out for something. That counts. If you try out and fail, you feel like the athlete. So think of how many people are experiencing something separate. I'm telling you, it starts to look like ADHD in the beginning, then it turns to bipolar that eventually looks like major depressive. That's the whole development. But it starts because they went, Nina, you swing that club 1,000 times, and when you got 10,000 hours on that viola, then you're a master. Yeah. Am I on something, you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would think so, because, I'm just talking about personal experience, because I stopped playing golf after the first semester I got to college. You know, this is after it being taking over my life. Stopped playing violin. So I stopped playing violin, stopped playing golf at the same time. So I had to have gone through
that
cycle you just spoke of, because I stopped doing two things that I was doing 90% of my life for at least 10 years of my life doing both things simultaneously, stopping at the same time. But that's when I started DJing, right about when I started DJing.
That's what I did.
So
that's what I did.
I guess that was my addiction. I mean, I took my dedication to understand the process and my understanding of practice time, and I would just put hours behind learning how to beat match and learning how to blend sound, and I was obsessed with it, you know? I can't believe you actually heard my mix.
Of course. I click. It's on SoundCloud, everybody. Oh, go to SoundCloud.
No!
Yeah, it's good. It's an old school mix, but I like it. It's good. You know what I did the other day? You know what I did? It was so hard. I did it 2 months ago. I sold my last crate of records that were my favorite. I carried around for years. It was so bad. It was just an attachment, right? I just got to let them go.
Exactly.
But that was the set, though. That crate, boy, that one, it was actually a tub. That one tub, I could go for hours right there. Yeah, man, that was it. So, though, you go to DJing.
It was so hard to let go of the vinyl. But I held on to that shit forever. I'm not even playing these, but just... I used to go through them and just think about the track, like pull it out of the sleeve and just, you know, or randomly play a record here and there. But it's like, I don't need old scent, you know, I'll just create new memories. So it was just finally after, gosh, how many years? Over 10 years, I finally left them in LA last year. So I left them with, you know, a boyfriend of an ex coworker who they had just moved there because he's going to school at the Dutch Spot. Was that place in LA?
Yeah.
I was like, hey, does your boyfriend want two crates of records? Like, just borrow indefinitely. She was like, are you kidding me? I'm like, no.
So you just gave him away too, huh?
I was like, yeah, just borrow them until I ask for them back, you know? And I had a couple old cheap turntables and a mixer too. And I was like, oh, first it started off with that. I was like, I don't need this stuff. Am I going to try to be a DJ? Why am I holding on to this? You know, because I moved across the country in one car. I'm like, I'm going to fit everything I need in this car. I don't need that stuff. So I was like, does he want these turntables? Hey, while he's at it, does he want to take these records? And they're like, are you serious? I'm like,
wow. Yeah. So you got used to it.
It's really awesome. So that's all I wanted. I wanted, it just was such a waste to hold on to something, you know, that's just not being used. It's created to be played with. So at least they're in use. So that's much more value to me than me holding on to it and saying these are great memories.
So you went through actually two shedding processes, it seems. It seemed like you got used to just to where you would just shed it. Like you just shedded the viola and shedded golf, picked up the music and ran with it, then one day just shedded it.
Yeah, that's my life story. I get heavily involved into something and then just we're heavily attached some way or another, and then either by choice or by, you know, being forced out of something, I just have to let it go. So it's been an interesting life.
Maybe you just master it, because it seems like you master it. I mean, it seems normal, though. You master it, you move on. You master it, you move on.
Yeah, exactly. This is all our life themes, right? Because if you don't, you're just stuck in it forever, and then you can't move on. You can't continue to experience life if you continue to hold on to whatever story you're telling yourself or your physical attachment, because it brings you whatever sort of emotion. It's not true, you know. It's absolutely not true. Such the awards and trophy symbolize. So where are we now? Yeah, so back to that, like, I mean, I had to move so many times throughout my high school year. So that's another part of that whole, like, attaching and letting go thing in my life. So at the age of 14, moved from Tucson to... This is so interesting. Okay, so the first time we were ever told to move, we were told by my dad's company. I think he was working for a company called Allied Signal. We were told that we were being moved to Seattle, Washington, and we were super excited and packed up the whole house. Everything was planned, and a month before the move, no, it was just a couple weeks, actually. We were counting down, so I think it was a couple weeks. They're like, oh, we decided to shut down the Seattle location. You guys are actually going to move to Kansas. I'm like, what? So second semester of my freshman year in high school, after growing up in the same town, same friends, right, and moved from one high school to another. And that was really traumatic, you know, to have to start over in a completely new city, completely different demographic, you know, Tucson, Arizona, smack dab in the middle of the Midwest.
That's trauma.
Yeah, total trauma. So, and then it was also the worst blizzard in 7 years. So we were snowed in for a few days, I remember. It was cool missing school, but it was just like, what? What is this seclusion? What's isolation? It was kind of crazy. So that happened, and then got really into the – that's when I really started to learn how to DJ, I think it was in Kansas City. I started in Kansas City, and then I went to school there for another 2 years, and then my dad, again, was moved to Austin to work for Dell, and that was my senior year of high school. So then I graduated from a completely different high school. I moved to three high schools. So I immediately chose to go back to Kansas City, Missouri, to go to college there because I had attachments. You know, I was in the scene and had my friends there. So I took my first opportunity at, it was just like a tiny little golf scholarship to UMKC. And by then I was so burnt out on golf. Like, I was so over it. I almost actually hated it because it was, I was put there, you know, and I had to take this opportunity and keep playing golf and maybe go pro. I didn't want it at that point, you know. I started getting really into DJing and actually fashion quite heavily. So anything in the arts, you know, of course. So, yeah, it was interesting. All my friends went on to study music in college, either, you know, composition or something like that. And I went and got a business degree. Nobody told me to do it. I, for some reason, just intuitively was like, okay, I'm not quite sure what area of study, you know, what industry I want to go to. I know I'm going to go either into music or some sort of beauty or fashion. It had to do, be something creative. And I know I suck at... Well, I, at the time, I was just like, I need to know how to run a business somehow. Because I know, I don't know, nobody told me this. You got to know how to run stuff, like how things and people operate in the world. So I'm going to go do that. And, you know, my dad was always like, oh, you can come work at Dell with me. Oh, go get your MBA. You can go work your way up the corporation. And I'm like, no, that's exactly why I'm going into business, because I don't want to do that. Like, I want to find my own way. And I'm not quite sure what that is right now, but this just makes sense. So... I was really excited to learn and go to school. And, you know, when you go on the golf team, you have to go on these golf trips and it takes a lot of time away from school. You're missing a couple days of school. And I hated that. And so a few times I'm like, can I just not go on a couple of trips? Like, do I have to go on every single one of them? And so they didn't like that I asked that. And also because of the way that I dressed, like a raver, you know, I was like the weird kid on the team, and they were competitive with each other too. And I was just like, I'm just here to play golf. Like, what? We're on the same team. Like, what's going on? It was just, the dynamic was so weird, you know? And then like, I was the weird one. And then, so,
I love when I can watch old memories zap through people's heads and they go, should I say that? Should I say that?
That's exactly what I'm thinking. Should I tell the story? No, it was the best thing that could ever happen to me. Otherwise, I'd continue to live a lie and a life of torture, right? So what happens after this, hung out with these girls because they were drink. Oh, hello?
Yeah, let's do something real quick. I noticed something. You know how you can, I know we're live, people, so just stay with us, right? You'll like it when I'm done. All right. Go up to the little microphone thing. Remember how you muted yourself earlier and all that?
Oh, yes.
All right. Yeah. You see that little star crank looking thing where it says settings?
Uh-huh.
Click on that.
Okay.
And then you see where it says microphone. Move that to the plug-in Apple.
Built-in microphone?
Not that one.
Default?
Nope.
Oh, built-in output?
Nope.
AirPlay default? Okay.
The one that says, you'll see where it says microphone. How many selections do you have under the microphone to move it to?
to default and built-in microphone.
Well, the built-in one, which one are you selected on now?
You know, it's weird. It doesn't say.
Doesn't say which one you're selected into. Excuse me, people watching.
Oh, default. Here, do you want me to go to built-in microphone? Yeah, I put it to built-in. How does that sound?
Now you're going to use your Apple microphone. There you go.
Oh, can you hear me now?
I hear you wonderfully.
Oh.
Welcome. You were saying. No, so the transition that you're making. So you're basically kind of shedding the golf team slowly too. But it seems like that's what it taught you though. I mean, from moving like that, you had to learn back in the day. It's called a survival skill. I write about it in my book actually. Is in your early life victories to survive trauma, we develop tools. We develop certain things, right? Our go-tos. And you use that same thing. So when you shed your middle school, everything you knew, you had to do something then, become unattached quickly so you could survive that trauma. The same thing when you move the next time. And so now this time, that's what you do when you had to leave golf, when you had to leave the viola, when you had to leave college, when each time it was that same defense mechanism. It's beautiful. It protected you all the way, man. It's so cool. You have truly lived your rampage from day one, Nina, by the way. I mean, you really have. I mean, from symphonies at what, 9, 12? How old were you?
Oh, when we started to attend them?
Yeah, when you were playing them. When you were playing them.
Oh, probably in my, like, playing in symphonies. 13, 14, 15,
so you're 13, 16, oh my God, 13 years old playing in symphonies to college golf tournaments. I mean, you're like a little prodigy, and you were pushed to be something like that, and come to find that all you did was resist against it anyway. I mean, that is living a cognitive rampage there, Nina. It's beautiful. Yeah. I love this story, man. I'm glad that you weren't lying on Facebook, that you don't have fake book, that like who you turn out to be in an interview seems to be what I could discern from what you put out there.
Oh, wow.
So can you lead me to how you found functional patterns? And now, you know, what's funny is I wrote down as you were talking, just as proof to show that I wrote down. Tell me when you can read it.
Patterns, music, and golf.
Because I could see the teaching the music patterns. You started to allude to that. And I want to see if I can walk you back there to how you started to see where music and its pattern being one instrument amongst many to create something powerful, how that fed to you, spoke to you, and led you kind of down this functional patterns path.
Well, I have to go into golf next then, because that's kind of like a segue into it. So when it comes to golf, it teaches you not only just mental discipline, but how each tiny little adjustment that you make in your grip to your body position, to the way that you're, like, you start learning these things about the human structure at a very young age. And what you learn is that you have to perfect your swing before you go on the course. You can't mix those two things together. You have to completely fix your mechanics prior to going out there in the game, you know? And so with that being said, it's like within just learning the swing, and you start breaking down each little sequence, like, where is the shot going wrong? Well, that generally means you start working backwards from there, right? Like, if this is happening at the top, then that means you're probably taking it too far away. There's just different mechanics that
I've had a few lessons, and my cousin used to lose his mind trying to teach me that I somehow was a rubber band that was held up straight, twisted in place, and I had to unwrap all at once.
Yeah. That's exactly what
myofascial
swinging systems are.
Yeah, couldn't do it. I tried to attempt it. I played baseball too long. I might as well have just pointed out to the fences, because when I hit this slice, man, it is going to slice like I'm swinging for left field.
So it's very fascinating and beautiful and artistic if you look at it, and you look at it from the kind of perspective I already had at a young age, looking at things very artistically and geometrically, you know. So I was able to apply that to golf, and a lot of things, I learned my swing. This was the hardest thing. I learned my swing at a very young age with a very overturned grip. Right. So if you're supposed to have like two, I don't know if you could see me, but like,
yeah,
you grip the club, you're supposed to have two Bs
with
your thumbs, right? Pointed down the Shaft.
All right, I'm getting a lesson here too now. I'll take a free lesson in golf anytime.
This much of a huge difference, right? So I had to, after a couple of years of learning it wrong, and you have a very powerful swing that way, but it's not very accurate. So although you may produce a lot of force, it's not the right type of force, right? So you're almost forced to have to compensate your entire swing from that position. So I had to retrain myself to bring this arm over. That changes everything, right? So like just this one tiny degree of external rotation on that humerus occurs from rotating the wrist. One tiny degree affects how you take it back, how you rotate it, and how you power through the shot. So you feel that significant difference, you know, and then understanding that and having to rewire that, reprogram that into your body until you're not having to think about it. Because when you're making that transition, I had to make that transition during a period of my life where I was competing in tournaments. I remember that. And it was really tough because trying to make that transition where you've already mastered your swing with the incorrect grip, and then you're trying to do it on the golf course, you're going to fuck up, you know? You can't try to change your swing on the course. All you can go by, and, you know, I was never one to, like, hardcore go into, like, oh, the wind is, you know, blowing this hard and the greens are running. I would just visualize, right? Because that's just too much. When you start overthinking shit, you start overthinking the wind and the degree of the hill and all that stuff, and then start thinking about your swing. It just, that's how you fuck up a shot, right? Every single time you start filling your mind with all these distractions and all these fears and anxieties, you're already determined how it's going to come out, right? So all you have to go by when you're playing, for me, it was very evident for me, even if I don't play for 2 years and just go out and play, I have nothing to go off of except just visualizing the shot. And not thinking about anything and just swinging, and it always gets to where I want it to go. And I don't question it. I'm like, that's really crazy. I haven't practiced, you know. You learn at a very, very young age the power of visualization and that it works, you know. So from there, it kind of went off on a tangent.
Well, the reason I let you go, I've interrupted so much during this show, I'm literally biting my tongue back here so I don't say anything.
Oh, well, see, I have a problem. I have a really bad problem of interrupting myself and starting a new story, and I never get back to it.
Squirrel.
So I have all these unfinished stories.
That was kind of deep. That was kind of deep. Think about it.
I don't know where I went, but...
You started talking about, you know, trying to reprogram perfection that you had already thought you perfected and how one minor change.
So, you just start to... It's to start working with the body at that deep of a level... And, you know, taking lessons and learning all the mechanics of gripping and posture and alignment. And like you learn, you know, you look at everything through angles too. It's really neat, you know? And so that was really fun for me to get into that. And,
makes sense.
The first career I ever wanted to, I was like, the first time I ever was like, I want to go and be this. It was a golf instructor. I never pursued it, but that was one of the first things I ever wanted to do. And so from there, that's kind of my introduction into sports and human biomechanics, I guess, is through golf. And
it makes sense from what I've learned from Naudi so far and the 38 million times I've watched our episode and have learned two things and then three things and 10 things. And you think you've heard it all, right? It makes absolute full sense to me when you were talking about that rubber band or that swing of the golf course, how one hand adjustment affects everything, and how he explained the natural mechanics of, well, biomechanics as he refers to it as, is what you do up here affects what rotates down here, you know, in some fashion, if you will. And it makes total sense from music to even the way you were taught to read music, that flows into a pattern, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Where was I going to go with the golf thing?
How did you meet functional patterns? What was the, you know,
oh,
you,
okay.
How did
okay,
that,
so
you know,
let's dive
you were,
into that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I actually never knew it was a program. When I first started training back in 2007.
That's right. You were going to Equinox because you got to wind up at Equinox somehow from.
Yeah. Golf. Okay. So we'll jump into the training. So that's kind of the end of like golf and all that is kind of the end of my whole like being into fitness somehow, you know. The rest of college was spent in DJing and then pursuing after school. I got my degree and I pursued a cosmetology license at the Paul Mitchell Academy. I got really into cutting and styling hair and wanted to be a fashion stylist. And then got really attached to this is how my career is going to go. And this is my future. I mean, and with that, I also battled some pretty gnarly thyroid disorders all through my teens, early teens. I had hyperthyroid. So where your thyroid is super overactive and my gland was super overactive. They tried to put me on medication and it just didn't do anything. Like the highest dose just kept going up. Like, we're just going to have to remove that sucker.
What are some of the effects of the hypothyroid that you experienced?
So hyper is what I had is I always was told I had ADHD from early elementary. All my teachers were like, she needs to be put on drugs. And my mom was like, no, fuck that. Thank
Honey,
you.
Honey, your excellent, excelling student needs to be put on methamphetamine, mother and father, just so you know. I mean, that's what Adderall essentially is based off one molecule change, but still.
Yeah, I couldn't focus, you know, I couldn't focus in school. Anyway, so, yeah, where am I at now? I'm lost.
No, you're not.
Help me, where am I?
You're not lost. You know exactly where the story is.
Where was I?
No, you just think you're lost. Watch, in three.
I am lost. My mind just went blank.
You keep saying you are. Of course you are.
We're going back to where we at? Oh, the beauty industry. Okay, so
told you.
Yeah, so after the beauty industry, I get put in a salon, and it's a very small salon, and I was doing absolutely not what I wanted to do. I just got stuck in this rat race, making money, doing color touch-ups, and I'm like, no, I wanted to get my degree. Cut hair, style hair, and like, you know, work on editorial stuff. Like, this is not what I want. And I started getting really, really sick around the chemicals. And it was a very abusive environment in terms of.
Hey, did you were going to say actually what some of the effects of your thyroid issues were on you? Like, some of the problems that you were, that you had to deal with because of it.
Yeah, so it didn't really show up too much until I got into this specific setting, right? So it takes a couple of years. Like when you get it removed when you get it removed, your body has to go through at least a couple of years for your hormones to level out. And so Wow. Through that time, I thought it was bipolar. And so you develop a chemical sensitivity to like everything and you develop a food sensitivity. Wheat and soy products and broccoli, you know, cruciferous vegetables that I love. Everything that I ate a lot of. I was eating a lot of soy and like a lot of broccoli at the time. Certain things you just have, you get, it increases your symptoms, hypothyroidic symptoms. So for hypothyroid, where it's under functioning because you had your thyroid removed, yes, I'm on medication to regulate it, but it took a while until it started to regulate. You become sluggish, you have a hard time concentrating or thinking. And the first thing that was super evident was eating, consuming wheat. It's worse than a hangover for me. You know, if I consume wheat, I feel, and a lot of people who have hypothyroid do continue to still eat wheat, you know, because they don't know that they can actually feel better and function better if they're off of it. So yeah, you start to look at, you know, if I have this condition and I have a choice to eliminate these factors from my life that are going to increase my well-being, then I need to remove myself from it, you know? And it was also a very toxic environment because the people that worked there, they all had a very, very, very negative mindset, you know? And I think the first time I ever really found like a really heightened flow state outside of playing golf or violin was I was really getting to the law of attraction back then. And getting into, from business school, you know, I had learned all these great principles and I would collect articles and put things together. Like in case I run a business one day, it was really important that it was run on a strong foundation, on strong values. And I would have like mission statements and stuff like that. And so that culture was great. The culture that was ingrained in us at the Paul Mitchell Academy was all about, you know, how you serve people through your energy and your kindness, you know, and not what you're actually doing, but how you make people feel. And it just correlated with all the business aspects that I loved from school. So I had asked to put a little workshop together and make little binders and create, because they had no policy and all they did was complain and it was toxic. And it got to the point where I was crying every night I went home because everybody would just be constantly on each other. And so I put together this little binder. I remember that. And did a little improv like lecture on how they could navigate, like if they felt certain ways, like how to get out of their rut, you know. So then I was like, wow, okay, I can achieve this state in a different way, you know, other than what I'm used to. And so from there, I knew how to get out of the hair scene. And my husband at the time, I was married. So when I first moved back to Austin, the first gym that I joined, my first way into fitness actually was following yoga. So thank goodness this Bikram Yoga Center somewhere around Rock closed, because that was kind of like all I was really doing in college for like the last year. I didn't really get into fitness too much. So from there, I was going to this little place, took a couple classes, they closed down, and I'm like, well, where do I go? There was 24-hour fitness, and I walked into it. And the trainer that I set up with on my assessment ended up becoming my trainer, changing my life, changing my values, you know, and we got married. And
okay, yeah, I'll say that'll change your life a little bit. Shout out there.
Okay. Yeah. And so when I was going through this massive depression of like, oh my God, like, why am I here? I went to school. I need to continue this career, but I'm so unhappy. It's so toxic. I would literally taste the chemicals in my mouth for the next 2 days. I was out of the salon, and I would just feel so toxic. And I was eating, like, because I knew it, I was eating. At that time, I was compulsively on the verge of orthorexia, too. Just, I went through this phase after college because I just was so toxic on my body, just going super, super clean and, like, kind of macrobiotic. And it was very compulsive, and it was something that my ex-husband helped me really address, you know, like, dealing with guilt and treating my body in a balanced way, as opposed to being so extreme.
Yeah.
Because I used to be extreme with it in the past. So he's like, you know, you're so obsessed with health and fitness. All you do is, you know, read these magazines, read my textbooks. He had the NASM. Back in the day, they had these little flip books, you know, and cards and things. So I would always be looking at it, you know, and studying it just because I was curious.
Well, and you were bred that way.
Right? Just curious cat. So
now you were pretty much bred to be that. I mean, look at it. You were a perfectionist in music, perfectionist in golf, perfectionist at fitness. I mean, perfectionist at DJ. I mean, but when I say perfectionist, I mean, all right, you're talking to another artist over here too. So when I say perfectionist, well, I don't mean that you played it perfect. I mean, you allowed the art to flow through you in perfection is what I'm saying.
Okay, cool. That's a nice way to look at it. So he's like, why don't you try training? I'm like, oh, I should, you know. And the best thing that I got out of being so ironic, kind of, because you go to school to be a hairdresser and create art, but the most positive feedback I would ever get. Not that my haircut sucked or anything, but the best feedback I would get from working at that salon at the time was that I gave the best shampoos, massages, and the people were like, "Whoa, you have some healing hands." Like,
I believe in that.
Are you a massage therapist? I'm like, no, I actually hate massaging. Like, I still hate massaging. Sure. I don't. That's not something I.
My wife has healing hands. She's a ARMP nurse practitioner, and she does. She's got these hands, man. I'm telling you, and they're healing hands. That's weird. I know it sounds all oogie boogie, but it's kind of like pudding people. I'm telling you.
Yeah. No, I agree. So that's. I was like, okay, and multiple people would tell me. People would come back just to get the tea tree shampoo. Yeah, so that was kind of neat. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I should try my hand at this, you know? And he was like, you already know the material. You've been, like, studying it for fun, so just go take the test, you know?
Yeah.
So he got me hired on at another 24-hour fitness, and I just loved it immediately. So I was still trying to do hair for a little bit. I was like, I'm done. I'm done with this industry. I'm done with what it's done to me.
You got to be a teacher. You said the only thing you wanted to do is be a golf instructor. That's a teacher. Well, this is the first time you got to teach.
Yeah. So, it's always been wanting to be a teacher of some sort. So I started training at 24 in South Houston in 2007. And so it was always instilled in me, like, perfect the instrument first. Understand, get to know your instrument before you just start playing on it. You know what I mean? You can't just start, like, going at it if you don't really know where your fingers should be on the instrument, how the strings should be. The same thing goes with the body. It's like, and so that's my frustration. That was like my frustration with the training industry, going straight into it from already kind of understanding the body from an intuitive level, not having a degree in it, you know, and then constantly being put in gyms with amazing people with degrees in the field, you know. We're so indoctrinated to programs and systems. And then you see them training and it's like, how's that not common sense to you? How's not, like, just seeing improper movements occurring, you know? And I didn't mean this in a cynical way. It was always from a place like, oh my God, that person's gonna get hurt. You know, I would see predictable patterns of dysfunctional movement that trainers were doing on their clients. I'm like, that person's going to hurt their shoulder, their elbow, or their knee. I would see it months later. They'd come in with a brace or they'd complain. And this isn't just at that gym. I mean, I was moved from there to Fort Worth after I got married.
Look, that's not criticism. That's the same thinking you applied to yourself when you practiced music in your golf swing. You looked at your music and you said, nope, that little hand turn's going to hurt me one day. I got to work hard to turn that and change that. But you challenged your own beliefs throughout it the whole time. So, you know what I mean? Seeing people's, you said the word indoctrinated, that moved me.
Yeah. So, I mean, as with most formal education systems out there in the field of health and science and medicine. I mean, you know this.
It's the same over here with these therapists. It's the indoctrination to what is and how you do it and the licensure of how you do therapy, what it's about. It can be detrimental to people.
Yeah, it is very much so, because it takes people who enter, you know, any sort of healthcare wellness industry wanting to do good, but then are so brainwashed against actual truth, integrity, you know? And it's like, well, because this is how we're told to do it, so we can just turn a blind eye to what was not stated in this textbook as the process of how it's supposed to be done. And then, so then when people come back injured, it's like, okay, then immediately they don't even regard it as it being their fault. And it was sickening, you know? And I never said anything to anybody, but ironically, when I switched gyms, I went to one in Fort Worth, and a lot of the clientele were elderly people. I love elderly people, but a lot of young trainers are afraid to work with them. They just want to take other like-aged people through class and through workouts, you know? And so buy off. I'm like, give me all the people. I love them, you know. But from there, you really start to learn different structures and the severity of you know, poor structures and how to fix stuff from a very micro level. But, and then so from that, then I suddenly became the trainer that only worked with dysfunctional people. Like, I was like, that's all. So I was like the rehab trainer. And again, at this point, I hadn't discovered functional patterns yet. You know, I was still, when I got into NASM, and I was like, wow, this whole corrective exercise protocol and addressing structure, that makes so much sense, you know, but it was barely touched on. It's like, okay, let's just pick the, I think they said that, like, do the assessment and then just pick the top three and just show them, you know, this many minutes of this MFR corrective exercise technique and then move on with the workout. Well, with my meticulousness that I learned from golf, from cutting hair, it's all about angles, right? I was super meticulous when I was cutting hair. It drove myself crazy because it would take me like over an hour to like do a haircut because I had to, you learn from there, every angle that you direct the hair or how you cut the hair, it affects how it falls. So you have to be so precise with that shit, you know? So that again falls into kind of the method of functional patterns in a sense that you see that relationship, how everything that you do affects the greater picture. So yeah, I started getting really into the world of corrective exercise and fixing bodies. And I'm like, this just doesn't make sense why I just have to, from there, just go throw them into this program because it says, okay, after this many weeks, now go here. But I'm still seeing shit happen. And I would get so bothered, like if I saw a compensation happen, I'd stop what we were doing, you know, do corrective protocol, and I would see the change. I'm like, okay. From then on there, I became even more obsessed with myofascial release and seeing the significant change that it had on the body, you know, and fixing the structure from root causes and not just addressing symptoms or not just chasing the short-term goal of losing weight or looking a certain way. So from there... It's really interesting. So that's kind of the root of my training. I would, from there, I would put together emails with different tutorials on how to do MFR. And every few months I would update it. And I think it was in 2000, it was right, I think in the middle of when I was competing at the, towards the end, 2012, 2013 is when I discovered functional patterns. And I was like, holy shit. Everything I had been doing up to my career, like everything that, I don't know, it was just like the most validating point in my life. I just erased like all the videos I was sending. Because I would actually send videos. I'm like, okay, so take this from this video and this from this video, but don't do what he's doing here. And like, it just became so complicated. Like, this is a bad version of this. Really, how you want to do is half like this, half like that.
Right.
And everyone's like, why don't you just make your own videos? This is so confusing because it's totally not like how you show us, you know? And so when I discovered his videos, I was just like, what the fuck? Like, because he would explain things in a way that I would explain it. He would show things in a way that I was just like, this is insane. Like, it's really cool to see somebody on that same level take the same approach, but is making a greater impact. He just validated things I intuitively knew within myself, but didn't ever articulate it the way that he does, you know, and just, so from there, I started cherry picking videos. I never sat there and was just like, oh, cause you know, you get stuck in your box and you, you know, on how you train or how you train yourself. And so I would just every once in a while glance. And through the journey of my career from Fort Worth, so it was from there I started training a couple of women. It's so funny because I was really into lifting weights and building muscle. I was always very skinny, right? So I just got really hardcore into weightlifting, sculpting my body, and putting on mass. And so guys would see me working out, and then so... and send their girlfriends to me. I ended up getting two clients. and training them for a competition. And I'm like, I've never trained anybody for, I don't know anything about this world. You know, I've actually kind of avoided it because it kind of went against everything I stood for, as far as how to treat your body. And so I'm like, I'll do it, you know? And when I get into something I don't know about, I get very obsessed in it and just immerse myself.
No, you don't say.
So I got to train some competitors, and it was, they did really well, you know, did their diets, and it was just another, you know, just another new thing for me and to get into, to learn aspect of training, but it went against everything I understood about being holistic with the body, and taking care of one's internal state of being, living like a macrobiotic lifestyle and going into something like that. So they encouraged me to get into competing. And so I was so against it. I'm like, no, I would never do that. I don't need that. You know, I don't need that validation. I would never put myself out there like that. That's just the most uncomfortable thing anyone can do in parade. I was always really against pageants, you know? So it's like, why would I do that as an adult? And then I don't know. I was like, well, I'm really not training for anything. And it just scared the shit out of me. So that's what made me do it. I'm like, this is the most frightening thing I could possibly. So let's just fucking do it. Because why not? So I also like just did it as an experiment. But then you get obsessed. You start seeing changes. And you're like, oh, I want to reach that perfectionism. And so I started using the MFR techniques to really understand joint mechanics and how to fully activate, you know, certain muscles of the body, and using it simply for aesthetics. Still at this point, no real understanding or anything about the sling systems or anything like that. So I get really heavy into the bodybuilding culture, and I do a couple of competitions, and the last show that I did, I won the last show and was going to get sponsored to go nationally and get a pro card. And it's just like, it's so much hype for nothing. I'm like, I don't even want this, you know? So then it's like,
well,
this is kind of a pattern here. In my
you mastered it.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't need. And I never even went into it to win. That was a thing. So,
no, you went in it to master yourself. That was a challenge to you.
Right. But then it just changes your whole mindset. I mean, everything is so self-serving. Every choice that you make is this going to help me look leaner and tighter or not? Like, that's it. Not, is this going to benefit anybody else besides me, you know? So, I mean, it's just like the most extreme possible route one can take. I think going on a road of self-discovery, I don't regret it. But it definitely brought me where I am today, because even through that process, it kind of teaches you see what really matters, you know, through my marriage that I had. And, you know, we got married based on incorrect intentions anyway. We did it because we felt like we wanted to prove ourselves, to our parents. And so it wasn't something that should have happened anyway. And, you know, but with that being said, like, what brought us together was, after many years of not playing golf, we got into it together. You know, that's like what built our relationship, was to fall back in love with the sport that we both played competitively. He played in just high school, but he was an, you know, all around athlete. So that was kind of like the crux of our relationship in the beginning, was going out and playing golf. And so for me, it was like, no, I have to save my energy so I can get in the gym and work out. And it was kind of like the one thing that we really like to do together. So, it made us grow apart, which was probably the best thing anyway, because we're both in a better place, you know. It was a very conscious ununion. But Where was I?
You were talking about how, you know, you found a way to separate from somebody that was so inspirational and meaningful in your life, and but being aware enough to recognize that it was time to sever that, that it served whatever the purpose, whatever it was for. And
yeah.
I think it's beautiful, though, that two people can, you know, I try to tell people that are going through divorces or thinking about it, you know, you don't have to hate the person to leave them. You know, a lot of people try to build up to hate the person they're with, thinking it's easier. That actually makes it harder because you really don't hate them. And so then you force yourself to try to hate them for a long time. That doesn't work. And to hear that you were, well, it doesn't surprise me that you were mature enough at that age to be able to separate and go, you know what? Let's just accept the energies and the, you know, what we gave each other, be grateful for that and walk. And that moved you, I'm going to assume, into another realm of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but yeah, that was how it really got in the way of the relationship amongst other things. But, that was just kind of my view on how I approached it, its role in my life, getting into that culture and being just so fixated on looking a certain way and my whole lifestyle around that, that it just, it was the reason why I kind of destroyed a relationship, you know, but again, like I said, it wasn't meant to be. So, with that being said, even though I looked great, I didn't feel good. You know, I had my reoccurring pains, in certain areas, and no matter how I tried to fix stuff, it would always kind of come back, you know? So, from there, I really started to get further into functional patterns. And then he started putting out that it was a program. I was like, oh, this is a certification program. That's really neat. You know, so at that time, so I'm still at 24-hour fitness. I went through a couple of shedding periods. So from 24, I ended up in Burbank, 24. And then I was just like, I'm just not happy here. I was not happy here. That just kept coming up in me. And I thought it was the physical environment, right? I'm not happy here in 24. So I'm going to go get a job at Equinox. Cause I thought that would make me happier, you know, and
I will perform well, and then I will have value.
Exactly. So I was very blessed to be given that opportunity and, you know, at Beverly Hills, and it was great. It was a great experience. But right, like, as I stepped into that gym, it was right when I went through one of the biggest transformations of my life, where I really awoke to, okay, this is really not what I want. You know, I just was getting heavier and heavier into trying to fix people's structures and get away from that stuff. From the, you know, training for aesthetics. And I didn't have I didn't know how to like communicate that with people. Like that doesn't matter. You know, I've been there, I've done that, I lived that. Like that's not going to make you happy to just ignore what the bigger issues going on in your body and just try to work around that. It just, you're going to feel worse inside. And, so by the time I got to Equinox, it's like everything's about aesthetics, you know. At this point, what I really want to do, and I started really getting heavy into doing body work on clients. Like I even tried to quit between my time between 24 and Equinox. I just started doing a lot of body work on clients. And I was like, maybe I'll just go into body work because nobody wants a trainer that wants to fix.
Talk about body work for a minute when you say that for our viewers and people that are listening, the difference there.
Okay, so the type of body work I do, it's not a massage. It's strictly breaking up the myofascia tissue. So trying to break down the connective tissue that pulls the joints in certain ways. So if you sit for long periods of time, which we all do, we generally sit to one side. Same thing as the way that we stand or that we sleep. So over time, just like, you know, when your mom says, if you make that face, it's gonna get stuck that way. It's true. Mom's right, you know.
Shout
your connective tissue is that, you know, that web of material that literally memorizes how your body is gonna operate from. And if you don't look at the structure like that and address and unwind and tune your instrument, no matter where you're coming from, it's always gonna be out of tune. It's gonna look like shit. You're going to sound like shit. Nobody wants to hear, you know, it's like me just going and getting my violin, not tuning it, just start going at it. Nobody wants to hear that.
You're making too much sense here, Nina. You're making too much sense, Nina. You're way too much sense here about how the body actually works. Like,
yeah, and like if the string somehow goes out of tune, you stop playing it, you tune it, right? Or if you like, if you can't get a certain thing, you stop, you practice that, you know, or a certain bow stroke, you gotta fucking master that shit. Same thing in the golf swing. If you can't get this one aspect of your swing down, we do little tiny drills for just certain things, right? Because every little component plays a huge part. And so when it came to, so if I apply that towards like addressing the structure, my obsession was fixing posture. I was had terrible, terrible posture. And I would try to just fix it through an ASM protocol, just working on that specific joint. You know, I didn't understand the fascial network and how it works through movement and how everything, the positioning of every little tiny thing, the principle of tensegrity affects the whole. So it just was intuitively understood, you know. So then when I really got into, delved into functional patterns and heard him explain, he'll explain this in the beginning. He's so smart. He's a fucking genius. Now you're a genius. He will, and he will explain the beginning of most of his tutorials, and most people ignore it. They just want to get to the demonstration. Can you talk? I've actually gotten feedback from me. We just want to know how to do it. I'm like, no, you have to understand how your body works. You know, and that's why I love these videos, because the reason why I had erased all the preview ones I sent to people was because they didn't fully go into the biomechanics of why this is necessary for the body, you know? So that's why I got rid of all of them, and all the videos I sent out from then on there were all functional pattern tutorials. But he explains the principle of rotation, and if you're trying to address a structure, you can, you know, break down the tissue, you can do MFR in one certain area all the time, and you can fix your posture just working on this joint. But if you don't integrate that through rotational movement, it's still not tuning into the whole picture, you know. And it was just like, whoa.
So you got to understand the philosophy of it before you get into it. I mean, the game plan, it's for anybody else that plays sports, whether you're a football fan or whatever. We have offensive philosophies, defensive philosophies. You can't just get in there and play linebacker. You got to know your role as the linebacker. So that philosophy, people. So please stop emailing Nina and Naudi here for saying, just show me how to do it. Please grasp the philosophy of this, as I'm still trying to. I've yet to ever ask, show me anything. I haven't asked Naudi to show me anything, teach me anything. I'm still listening to my show that he was on and processing, trying to grasp the full extent. It's much more detailed also, people, than a wrapped up rubber band unfolding. All right, you got to go further than that. So proceed. I'm sorry. It gets me too, man.
No, and that's why he's one of the greatest teachers out there, is because he implores you to do the research on your own. That's how you develop the intuitive faculty. If you're constantly driven to just, you know, get rewarded immediately, I want to know how, give it to me. You're never going to understand the process of research and understanding mechanisms and figuring that shit out and connecting the dots. It's just not going to be something you're going to be able to do if you're just constantly looking for the answers. So, yeah, the answers are always within, you know, and he always talks about this too. You have to learn through feeling. Don't overthink it. Just start moving, and you'll feel it. And then your brain will start to kind of figure stuff out. But that's really how everything I've ever learned has come to me, is through feeling. I've always understood things intuitively before I even knew the words to describe or explain it. You know what I mean? And so it's been really tough, because in the beginning of my career, because I always intuitively knew like what I was seeing, what I was reading, what I was immersed in, was just, it felt so wrong. And so I was always kind of like the black sheep. I was kind of doing my own thing in terms of training. And people are always questioning me. Why do you spend so much time doing them? I'm like, just watch in a couple months, like, you see the client structure moving more efficiently. Always looked so much better to me than someone doing a whole bunch of crazy exercises and moving like shit from the early in my career. And he's really, you know, functional pattern system has really helped me to understand why, to be able to conceptualize and articulate the rationale behind that, which I couldn't explain before. I was just like, I don't know. I just feel it. You know what I mean? I've lived it and I felt it, but he's actually created, like, he's put in so many hours to create the system that is, it's just common sense. That's what blows my mind, is that it's just, to me, it's just fucking common sense. It's just put out there.
Will you clarify
the difference? And people are like, what is this? This is, you're an asshole. You're destroying our industry. And
can you clarify too the difference? A lot of people will confuse once they look at it. They look at pictures and move on. Unfortunately, that's the world we live in, is they look at pictures and thumb through and think they know it. And I've got messages and emails from people about that show that talk about natural movement workout as bullshit, and they refer to this as natural movement workout. And please explain, if you can, as the master that you are in FP, the difference between what they call natural movement workout and what functional patterns is.
Okay, so natural movers, they just kind of base their philosophy of allowing your body to move however it feels like. It's just based on freedom of movement, going outside the boundaries with constructs of how we normally move in daily life. You know, explore your body, right? Now, functional patterns ask that you explore your body too, but what we do and what he strives to do is understanding the biological mechanisms of how the body should move, not just how it can move and push past those boundaries. How is that going to benefit you? You know, if, like he says, if you don't even understand what proper alignment is, how good is it that you can move outside of those boundaries? You know, they always say in art, you should always understand the rules before you can break it, right? So it's kind of the same thing. You have to have awareness of your body from a certain aspect, from its foundational standpoint, before you can just start doing whatever the fuck you want with it. Not to say that it's wrong, but when we talk about moving naturally, it's moving based on how we're designed to move. You know, we're designed to move on 2 feet and rotate from the trunk. That's it. We're just trying to respect that and respect tensegrity, how every part of your body affects, again, that I learned through golf, how something else moves. And if we know that we operate from the most efficient standpoint by how our pelvis and our trunk move in conjunction with each other as we walk, if that's our most efficient base point, it just seems obvious anything that you do that works against that is going to make you less efficient. You know what I mean? And so natural movers, I haven't gotten too deep in it. I just haven't been that fascinated to get into it. I'm just speaking on what I've kind of heard and seen, but I don't think they focus on restoring alignment and restoring the integrity of your spine. They're just about move freely. You know, we're about respect nature. You know, we were created a certain way, understand what that is, and move from there. You have no understanding of that, then you're always going to be lost. You're always going to be finding ways to feel better and mask symptoms than to just understand what your true nature is, you know, physically. And that from understanding what your true nature is, where you should be in physical alignment, that translates to every aspect of your life, you know, because from a mental, emotional standpoint, if you are running away from certain repetitive patterns in your life that are creating trauma and destruction, and you're just doing things to mask it, then you're going to deal with that in every level of your life. It's a pattern. You know what I mean? And so once you start to look at your body like that and you start changing your mindset and thinking about, oh, wow, I need to restore function. I need to feel better. You know, this is what I have to do. It's a painful process. You have to stop what you were doing to get where you think you want to go, but it's just not taking you anywhere. You're just stuck in this pattern of trying to chase something that's not real. So once you have to stop that first, fix the actual issue, and from there, there's nothing to have to worry about. Just fix the root cause. You know, we're just so used to running from everything and avoiding pain and avoiding having to take time off. It's like, no, just sit through the pain. It's the only way. And once you can do that, then you can deal with that type of stress and pain throughout all aspects of your life, you know? So I don't know.
That is called Nina's cognitive rampage. We extracted it, people. We got it out. She just went the fuck off. That is your rampage. That is what I was waiting for. I got to wrap this up. I got to get out of here and drive over to Melbourne Beach, Florida. So I'm stuck in a cave and I got to go get some sunshine today. Wow. That was, I always know when they're hitting the rampage because my heart starts racing for the person. And I'm like in the flow state. You grabbed me, man. That's so real. I mean, you have once again done something that I know, as you messaged me, made you very uncomfortable today, coming on here and doing what you have done on this podcast for now 1 hour and 37 minutes directly. Really? And I'm from my own opinion. I don't have much of a judge, I guess, but maybe I do. I loved this podcast. I loved crawling inside your life, your head, and feeling what you felt and what you thought and what you went through and where you are. And, you know, frankly, I want to see how far you go with this functional patterns thing, because you apparently seem to master everything within a year or two that you start and become bored with it. And I have a feeling from what Naudi is saying is that there is no necessarily fully mastering where he's at. And so for me, I would like to see if you ever do reach that point here and how far you may actually go from mastering so many things.
Yeah, I just want to push it. I just want to push the functional patterns.
I'll get Natty on the phone too, because I don't know if there's any functional patterns in Orlando, but if there is, could you hook me and whoever that person is up directly? I'm getting attached here, and you and I are very similar in the way you go. I'm onto this, and then I will dive in, get all the way until I'm like, all right, I'm bored. I'm going to do something else. And I get into it and move that way, man. And so as you were talking about your life, I could feel myself. I could be like, yeah, this was fun, but I'm done DJing. I did all what you did. I played college sports. I got out of college sports. I did a little bit of music and DJing. And then I took that until I got bored. And then everybody was a DJ when CDJs came out. And so I put the vinyls down. That got bored. Almost a similar route. And all the way to where I just took this mental route. To where I got all the education, I learned all the master's degrees, I got your counseling degrees, read all your books, and I'm standing here going, now you want me to get licensed in your bullshit? And I'm like, no, there's another way. It's something different, something outside, something more real, something more connected. And that's why I think I connected with Naudi so much, is he's doing that in a physical realm. He's doing that with fitness and the way you take care of it. I'm trying to do it with psychology. I'm trying to do it with how we apply counseling and therapy. And maybe him and I will get together one day and write a book or some shit like that.
That'd be awesome.
Mash our philosophies to come up with some functional rampage, maybe. I don't know. I like that. Functional rampage and cognitive patterns.
I like that.
Cognitive patterns and functional rampages. I like that. Well, I just
want to. So honored to be part of Functional Patterns. I wouldn't be here today talking to you if it weren't for that.
Never know.
I feel like Functional Patterns saved my life, saved my career, saved me from leaving this industry. Many levels.
Shout out to give your love to everybody you want to now, too. Tell everybody how much you love them. And also tell them where they can find you, where they can sign up. I got about 3 minutes till we turn to a pumpkin.
Okay. I have a Functional Patterns page on Facebook. And then I think if you just go to ninacho.com, that will link you to my Functional Patterns site. I'm based out of Austin, Texas, and I'm the only practitioner here. So if you want to come find me, you can contact me through the website or my Facebook. So
we got some fans in Austin. I can definitely tell you that. There's some there's some solid listeners in Austin. They're going to be looking for you.
I'd love to listen. I'd love to meet them.
Yeah, all right. So any shout-outs? Any love to anybody?
Yes, my mom, my sister, my dad, Andrew. And everybody at Functional Patterns, of course. Duh. Can't not send them my love. Oh, my God. that's my tribe, my family. I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for them. So,
hey, and everybody now, too, if you're a Functional Pattern family member, please ask to join the Tribe of Change. Now, I already told him, everybody that's involved in Functional Patterns, I consider every FP member a automatic member of the Tribe of Change, because that's what they're doing. That's what you guys are doing. So that's what the Tribe for Change stands for. So anybody out there that's an FP, please join the Tribe of Change right now and get involved. But Nina, I got to run. We got, I got to get out of here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
No, I thank you. You shared your life to me. You opened up transparently. Oh. You walked through unknown valleys today. You put yourself on a spotlight place, which is someplace you don't even really like to be, and have done that. But you were the sacrificial lamb today, and you truly faced the uncomfortable, because I think you learned that that's where the change is. And so thank you for coming on. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. All right, bye.
You take care. Oh, everybody, if you're still paying attention, I like that. That was so real. Like, you could see somebody that was just honest about, oh, I forgot to tell you something. Nina, if you're still listening or if you're watching, I want you to try something. I noticed this, and here's a tool for anybody out there that may feel this effect too. If you noticed her, when she would talk or thinks that she was ADHD, she thinks she would lose her place. So if you're listening, I'm going to talk to you like you're still here. When you thought you lost your place, I noticed every time you'd lose your train of thought, you stopped moving. You stopped moving. And if you have to look at your life, Nina, the way it's been, every time your brain has had to function to learn something, you have been moving. So you have been trained from a very young age to process playing the violin and learn as you move. Learning golf, you've had to learn as you move. DJing, you have to learn as you move. So and now teaching functional patterns, I know you teach as you move. So from now on, Nina, if you ever start to lose your place or think you have ADHD and forgot where you are, notice that you have stopped moving. Flow your body however you need to. Keep it moving and keep it flowing. Move your physical body around and watch yourself through this entire show. Watch when you lost your place, you just stopped moving. And then at the end, when you went on that beautiful rampage, that beautiful cognitive rampage, your body was like you were at a rave. You were dancing the whole time. So that's just a little tip. Anybody else out there, you notice what I'm doing, talking to stay in it. I take my own advice. So to stay in some flow state, I was taught to learn that way. So again, thank you, Nina. Thank you, Functional Patterns. Look her up. It was a blast. Hope you're taking care of you. I really got to run this time. What am I supposed to say, Steve? Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. Love you.